Committee Legislative Assistant will note the roll. And Representative McFarland has looked over the minutes and moves the minutes from April 8th. Are there any corrections or additions? Members, a lot of you were excused, so be sure you look over the list to make sure that we had you present or excused. Hearing no corrections or additions, all those in favor of adopting the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Members, just to help you understand the schedule now as we close out the policy meetings, we will meet again on Thursday at 8:15 here, and if necessary, at 5 o'clock here. After the holiday break, we will meet that Tuesday at 8:15 here, Thursday at 8:15 here, and if necessary, both of those evenings. So be sure you clear your calendar for Tuesday and Thursday following our break, and possibly Friday the 29th, since that is our deadline for policy reform. So keep those dates open, please, and those times. All of the meetings will be here. So with that, Representative Keel has House File 682. And Mr. Schoenfeld, would you like to join her at the table, please? Representative Keel moves House File 682 to be before the committee and lane over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And Representative Keel, I believe you have an amendment. Representative Greiland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This one is finance, though.
No, her delete all will get rid of the finance.
Ah.
Representative Keel, would you like to offer your amendment, please?
Madam Chair, thank you. And yes, I would like to offer the amendment A1. It will delete all of Section 2, which will take care of the finance portion of this bill.
Representative Keel offers the H0682A1 amendment, and you've heard her explain that it's a deletion of the levy, so this bill does not have to go to finance. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of adoption of this amendment say aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Representative Keel, present what's left of your bill.
Yes. I don't know if you members you remember probably a good month ago we had some testifiers in along with Mr. Schoenfeld to talk about the importance of career and tech education, and my bill proposes that we would offer that to students along with science, chemistry and physics classes. And I want to remind you that career in tech is a very important part of education. It engages students that otherwise might not be engaged. It I believe in my district promotes graduation rates, keeps students in school. And I have some personal sightings. My husband had a classmate, so we're talking years ago. We've had career tech in our school a long time. He was a construction trade student, and he is now a doctor in the metropolitan area and has been most of his life. But he was able to finance his college education by way of construction trades job. And so while we do those kinds of things really help our students to see a future. In my local district, we have had career trades or construction trades for a long time, and so we have quite a few successful construction trades companies within our area. But I look back at my schooling, and I have a lot of classmates that have gone from a health occupations class to we have a physician's assistant in our community. A lot of students that nurses that started out as CNAs, and back then you didn't have to have a certified nursing degree. You just were a nurse's aide then. And but they are now gone from LPNs to RNs and are very successful. And so I think it really gives our students a foot in the door to see what can be done. More importantly, I want to point out that ag agricultural classes in this school are in a very important part of Minnesota's economy. Agriculture is one of the leading industries in Minnesota, and not only can students find jobs in the rural areas, but also in the metropolitan area. There's quite an extensive need for agricultural employers or employees, anywhere from crop agronomists, which ties into our science classes, to computer technology. Farming technology that I guess it would go into the crops anyway. But I will let Mr. Schoenfeld speak and give us more of an extensive discussion.
Welcome to the committee. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jerry Schoenfeld, and I work with the Minnesota Association of Agricultural Educators. And I think this is the third time I've been before you this year on this kind of a subject, on this particular subject. As was indicated, Dr. Stone had come and spoke to the committee for a day, and we also had Mike Marin, who had brought forth a demonstration for you in terms of how our agricultural portion of career and technical education integrated into the science area. The genesis of this bill really comes several years ago when I brought forth some legislation to this committee that requested that agricultural science and agricultural economics be allowed to provide for economics and science credit for graduation requirements. It was supported almost unanimously by the committee at that time and became law. But later there were some additional requirements that were added to graduation requirements that required in the year 2014 that chemistry or physics be an additional graduation requirement. Because of that, as you look at a schedule, and particularly in light of the fact that many school districts have reduced the number of hours in the day that they're providing classes, it really almost became, in some cases, a moot point in some schools, the fact that we could provide this as part of the graduation requirement fulfillment, because of the fact that it was really pushed out by all the other required courses. I think that as Dr. Stone had talked to this committee about a month ago, I think he made a good case that career and technical education is an alternative for a number of students that may not go down that four-year science and math kind of career path. In addition to that, we tried to show you with Mr. Murin's testimony and his demonstration to you what we've done, at least in our agricultural education area, that we've integrated the science standards in Minnesota's requirements for the standards and benchmarks into our coursework so that we can provide that. So I think one of the purpose of this bill is to provide an ability to get a framework of science in a contextual learning situation. And beyond that, the bill provides some balance. For years, this committee and others have been talking about STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. We've been heavy on the science, heavy on the math, a little lighter on the engineering and the technical side. And this bill will help to balance some of that. I believe it also, as was indicated by the author, helps to keep students in school. And I think that, as Dr. Stone had presented to you, he showed studies that he had done nationwide that showed this to be the case. Secondly, it's one that helps with the economy. One of the things that really struck me in his presentation was the fact that we had talked about, we had basically taken a policy position in this country for a number of years that we would not particularly seek out low-skill jobs. And so low-skill jobs were exported to other countries that provided them cheaper. So that we took the path that we were going to provide an education system that was all bent towards high-skill jobs. But as he also indicated, high-skill jobs are also highly exportable jobs in many cases. And it is the middle-skill jobs, the places where there is hands-on, where people are required in the economy at the particular workplace within this country, that really has the greatest opportunity, and this bill will help with that. The last thing I'd say about it is simply this, that there is much to career technical education that I think people often miss in the fact that it also provides for a lot of leadership skills and responsibility skills, those kinds of soft skills of problem solving and teamwork that sometimes are missed in other forms of academic education that I think we really is are vital to good citizens in the country and also something very important here. So we support this bill, hope you will too. And with that, Madam Chair, I would stand for any questions you might have about it.
Thank you, Mr. Schoenfeld. Are there persons in the audience who would like to testify in support of this provision? House File 682 is amended. Are there persons in the audience who have concerns? Seeing none, hearing none, questions from members? Representative Greiland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Schoenfeld, I support the bill. I don't like narrowing of the curriculum, but I think we've been doing too much of and requiring the same things of all students regardless of interest or ability or talents, and so that's why I do support this bill. But I'm wondering if you know nationally if any other states that have already done this, how that impacted their grading on the race to the top in the last round.
Mr. Schoenfeld.
Madam Chair, I can't speak specifically to that, but I can tell you that when Dr. Stone was here, he did talk about a number of studies that he had done that showed that math skills and those kinds of things were actually increased when people were involved in career and technical education. So I think if you would review kind of in your memory some of the studies that he showed, it did show that.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I will not pursue it, but I do remember that, and I do agree with Dr. Stone and the bill and things that you have said, but I haven't noticed that the federal government is always quite so open-minded and reasonable lately on this kind of thing. So I think I just wonder, not that I'm expecting Congressman Klein or the Congress to come up with any more race to the top funding at this point, but should there be any and should we have the same criteria, then that would be my question.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. That's a good concern to have. I do believe that in my conversations with teachers in the last few weeks who teach in career and technical, that they're very proud of the fact that they've embedded math and science standards in their courses, and it's delightful to talk to them to know that they're probably teaching math and science at almost the same level as their counterparts in those departments. Question, Representative Benson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I'm just, we may have heard these numbers when we last had testimony about this subject area, but in Minnesota, how many young people you think are of the total are presently involved in this kind of career education? And with these changes, how much growth do you think you might see?
Mr. Schoenfeld.
Madam Chair, I represent the Minnesota Association of Ag Educators, so I can't honestly speak for all of career and technical education. There may be somebody else in the audience here that represents that area. I see some people at least that worked in it, in other areas such as health science and those kind of things. But I will at least give you a capsule of what we have in terms of ours. We have about 190 programs in the state in the high schools that teach agricultural education. And of those, there are some over 20,000 students that are served by those programs. And so that's kind of the area there. Now, in terms of expansion, I can tell you only this. We've had a very positive thing in the last few years with regard to agricultural education that we've actually not lost programs. We've actually increased a couple until this year. But there has been a huge concern about freshmen entering as they are preparing for this 2014 time period, where the graduation requirements that we're dealing with here are there, where people are, as they move into it right now, are starting to drop off away from agricultural education because they didn't feel they'd be able to fulfill the graduation requirements. So I think it will be very helpful.
Representative Benson, follow up. Other questions?
Madam Chair, I wanted to point out that the statistics I had looked at were that our workforce in careers was going to be looking for professional degrees that required about 30% of our students, while careers in our technical are 70%. So, and I'm not sure we're prepared. You know, we've really pushed the four-year degree, and I think we need to encourage students to look at two-year degrees, too, or beyond high school but not a full bachelor's.
Other questions from members? Thank you very much, both of you, and House File 682, as amended, will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Woodard. Representative Woodard, I will move House File 617 to be before the committee and to be considered for inclusion in the omnibus bill. Would you explain House File 617, please? You have no amendments, correct?
Actually, Madam Chair, I have a DE1 amendment.
Ooh, okay.
And the DE1 amendment is just based on some testimony that occurred during the Senate hearing of this. And so we have some language to clean up within the DE1 amendment.
So would you move that amendment, please?
Yes, I'd like to move the DE1 amendment for House File 617.
Representative Woodard moves the DE1 amendment to House File 617. And it's a clarification after the testimony in the Senate, correct?
That's correct.
Is there any discussion from members? Any questions of the author? Hearing none, all those in favor of adopting the DE1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted, and your bill is in the working order that you'd like it. Please proceed to explain, yep. Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and it's been my honor to work with the individuals at this table on a very limited basis, but I have visited the Belle Plaine School District and the Northfield School District and seen some of the really good work that the AmeriCorps volunteers are doing in our schools, both from a Promise Fellow standpoint in Northfield and in Belle Plaine, what they're doing with Reading Corps. And they do this throughout the state, and what this bill does is just clean up some language to help them continue to pursue federal dollars and private sector dollars. It changes the name and renames a program to really represent what they are, which is Serve Minnesota. It does do a couple of things, like requiring cost-benefit analysis and outcome-based grants. So it does require them to do some additional oversight over the grants that they provide within the state. And in order to do that, we are increasing their amount that we give them to administer the program from 5% to 7%, which is a difference of about $18,000. And then finally, we remove some obsolete language within the bill to make it much cleaner and much more aligned to what they actually do today. So with no further ado, Chairman Erickson, I'd like to hear from our testifiers, if that's okay with
Thank you very much. Please say your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Audrey Suker, and I serve as the CEO of Serve Minnesota. We're responsible for Minnesota State AmeriCorps programs, which are also sometimes referred to as a domestic Peace Corps. And I'd like to start off by thanking you for your support over the years. We've appreciated that greatly. And also to remind you that the reason Serve Minnesota exists actually is to really work by your side to help solve unsolved problems for the state. And we separated from state government in 2002, and doing that really allowed us to be a more nimble entrepreneurial organization and to also engage the private sector as partners in our work. And the first thing that we did when we separated from state government was to talk to Alice Segrin when she was here in the state legislature. And we shared with her our vision that this resource of AmeriCorps members could make a greater difference to the state if it were more strategically aligned with state priorities. And the result of that conversation actually was the birth of the Minnesota Reading Corps. And the Reading Corps was incubated using dollars in our YouthWorks appropriation. In 2006, we were delighted that the governor and the legislature actually approved a separate line item to support the growth of the Reading Corps. And what the Reading Corps does at its core is really combine the people power of the AmeriCorps program with the science of how children learn to read. And the results of our work in the Reading Corps have been remarkable, and the program has grown from serving 250 children in 2003 to this year, where we project to serve nearly 18,000 children all across the state. So with me today are two individuals that will speak to the value of AmeriCorps programming that combines science with people power. The first is Bill Adams. Bill is the principal at Chatfield Elementary in Belle Plaine, Minnesota, and he will describe the value of the Reading Corps to his school. The second is Sarah Dixon, and Sarah is the executive director of one of our programs that is funded currently through our YouthWorks appropriation, and one that exemplifies the same commitment to the use of data and application of evidence-based practices that our Reading Corps program does. And this is the type of programming that is consistent with the vision of our proposed new Serve Minnesota Innovation Act. Before I ask Bill and Sarah to speak, I'd like to draw your attention to the first handout that we prepared for you. The purpose of this handout that has a number of charts on it, looks like this, is to really drive home the point that we want to make, and that is that we use data to document our results and to drive continuous improvement. Now, I'm not going to take time today to walk you through all of that data, but I would offer that I would be delighted to meet with any of you individually that would love to dive deeper into what the data means and what the results are that we've obtained. Additionally, even better than that, if any of you wanted to visit a site, I'd be more than happy to arrange that. And then, of course, perhaps best of all, if the whole committee wanted to come to site, I'd be delighted to make that happen. So with that, let me turn it over to Bill Adams.
Welcome to our committee, Mr. Adams. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, Bill Adams. First and foremost, I'm honored to be here to support House File 617, as the experience that I have with it is nothing short of just simply success. The large majority of research, as you all know, points to the fact that early interventions eliminate a later need for special education services. And I'm thankful that this year our site was awarded one Reading Corps member, and I'm more excited to announce that next year we'll have two Reading Corps members, because we have realized significant achievements with our one Reading Corps member. Our achievements through this early intervention process prove that the wait to fail model that we currently have in place for special education qualification is in need of reform or change. I'm happy to report that at our school, 50% of the students that have received AmeriCorps reading services have been exited from the program. And what we mean by that is 50% of the students we project that were in the program will pass the third grade MCA reading assessments. So that's a pretty powerful number when you look at it in terms of that. But what I found to be more powerful is that 100% of the students have experienced growth in the program. And to be more specific about that, what that means is that those students have achieved one year of growth in less than a year's time. So again, that's a very powerful statistic. Another outcome that I consider to be successful is our referrals for specific learning disability assessments have dropped from 10 in the 2009-2010 school year to 2 in the 2010-2011 school year, so a drop of 8 referrals to that programming. These students in the past may have fallen through the cracks had we not had the America Reading Corps individual in our school building. And one of the things that I want to highlight is the qualifications of the MCR member in our school. She is highly skilled and obviously was trained very well by the Minnesota Reading Corps program to implement research-based interventions that are scripted, so specific interventions that she could follow. And she does a very nice job in tracking that data in terms of exiting students throughout the program, as I alluded to earlier in my testimony here. Due to the MRC being present in our school, our teachers now are utilizing the same data system that MRC is using, and that is Ames Web. So our teachers are now beginning to progress monitor their own students and tailor their instruction to meet student learning needs, which I consider to be a very positive impact on our school building and, most importantly, our teachers. So that is all that I have for you. If you have any questions, thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Adams, would you talk a little bit more about the Ames Web and how the data is entered and what data is entered?
Yep. Our students are, Ames Web is basically a technology-enhanced data tracking system. And basically what we do is we do three benchmark data points, and that would be the fall, winter, and spring, that we track the students' reading ability in terms of fluency, phonemic awareness, as well as mathematic computation, number identification, things of that nature. So we do those three benchmark periods on all students in our school building so we can track the growth of them from the fall to the spring. We also have what we call a progress monitoring tool, which we can track data on students either weekly, every 2 weeks. However, we set that up to be able to basically, we can implement a specific research-based intervention and then do that progress monitoring weekly. And if we see their trend data increase, we continue with that intervention. If that data decreases, then what we do is we change the intervention because it's showing that it's not being effective for that particular student. So they're basically prescribed interventions that we are able to implement with each and every student. So,
thank you, Mr. Adams. And do you begin the intervention earlier than third grade?
Yes, we begin. Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. We begin those interventions right away in kindergarten, and we are able to use those throughout time. Yes.
Thank you very much. Ms. Dixon, please say your name for the record and begin.
Yes, hi, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Sarah Dixon, the CEO of the Minnesota Alliance with Youth. I'm very pleased to have the opportunity to testify to and support this legislation today. It really reflects our strong commitment to using AmeriCorps resources to have measurable results for Minnesota students. The issue that we focus on is the unacceptable reality that in Minnesota we have over 15,000 high school seniors that do not graduate on time. And the backgrounds of those that experience these dropout issues really also reflect the growing academic achievement gap in Minnesota, one of the largest in the country. Our approach is really based in the research by Dr. Robert Belfonce of Johns Hopkins University, and he found that there are the three strongest indicators that really reflect dropouts, which are what he calls the ABCs, the early warning indicators of absences, 20% or more, behaviors, which are one or more referrals, suspensions, and then failing grades in core academic subjects like reading and math. And the, I think, even more interesting piece of this is that young people as early as sixth grade, if they're showing one or more of these early warning indicators, have a 75% or greater chance of dropping out of school. Our program model is also consistent with the National Center for Education Evaluation and Regional Assistance at the Minnesota Department of Education, and that targeted interventions are provided to students at the right time, at the point that data suggests that they need those interventions to get back on track. Our approach can be described as providing the right support, so very strategic and evidence-based interventions, to the right students, those that are experiencing those early warning signs, and at the right time. Again, before young people fail. Traditional systems oftentimes wait till they fail. This is really getting them early and back on track before. The handout that you'll see is really our framework and how we decide which students will be identified and the evidence-based practices that we use. I think another key piece of our work is that our AmeriCorps members serving in our program are a remarkable talent and passion. Representative Woodard, thank you for visiting our site in Northfield. We have some amazing Promise Fellows, and on the other side of your sheet is a Claire, who is a recent graduate at St. Olaf. About 97% of our young people, our AmeriCorps Promise Fellows, are college graduates, and she really chose to serve because she wanted to give back to the community in which she went to college and really learn those invaluable professional skills that are so necessary to be successful in the workforce. And another piece I'd like to highlight is the story about how she's made a difference for young people. And Representative Woodard had the opportunity to visit a couple of the young people in the program. Northfield has four Promise Fellows, and their data went from 36% Latino graduation rate to 91% in the 6 years that they've been working with us, which is pretty remarkable. And the story of this young man that she's worked with, he is from a family who never graduated from high school, dropped out of school, not interested in school, was failing school, and was absent a lot, to really transforming him to, he's now a B student, he's in school, and he's doing remarkably well. And I think I could go on and on about those kinds of stories that really impact the Promise Fellows impact the lives of young people. The support of this State Youth Works appropriation has allowed us to grow from 10 members to, we currently have 80 Promise Fellows serving in the state in schools and communities across Minnesota, and our hope is to grow to 300 members in the fall, from serving 9,000 students in Minnesota schools that have greater than average dropout rates. The good news is we really know we are using the best data possible to identify the students that we need to work with. We're using evidence-based strategies, and we're really ready to accelerate the number of young people that we're working with from 2,000 to 9,000, really moving them on a trajectory of failure to a trajectory of success. So again, thank you so much for the opportunity to present to you this morning.
Thank you very much, Ms. Dixon, for a very informative testimony. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the update to this this great program that's been in existence for some time, and it's nice that you have positive results. And as far as I look at the bill here, it's primarily technical in nature. I guess I'm going to be picky here, and I hope you'll tolerate that. But number one, the term of the new term innovation concerns me a little bit in that we have these innovation funds that are going to be used, and I think there's a little bit of perhaps confusion using that in two different bills to mean two different things. The one thing, if you're going to insist on using the term innovation, it for consistency purposes, it's missing on line 1.9 and 2.16 after the Serve Minnesota grant with innovation has been missing in two places, but it's in all the others. So my preference would be that we not use that term, that it's an existing program, and it will confuse it with if the other bill passes, and just have it be the Serve Minnesota grants. But I think for consistency, just to be picky, we should put it in all the citations in the bill.
Representative Norton, we've already made those corrections. Oh. Those are all technical corrections,
yes,
and we've taken care
and
of them.
They were technical.
Yes.
Okay, super.
Yes. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is obviously a program that's working, and it's very good to hear the expansion of the numbers of students served as well as the results. I don't think I'm being picky with my question, however. I think it's pretty substantive. You'll be the judge of that. It's on page 4, line 4.12. And we're changing the money skimmed off that doesn't go to students directly from 5% to 7%. And I notice one of the reasons for one of the uses of that money is administrative expenses. And I myself always look for organizations and charities and things that have very low administrative expenses. I like the number 4% actually, and I see that taxes and other things are included up here, so it's been 5%. But now, Representative Woodard, you are changing it to 7%, and I'm wondering what your rationale is for that.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Greiling. The reason for that is because we are also changing what the administration is going to do here, and that is to monitor the outcome-based programs a little bit more stringently than we've asked them to do in the past. That's the general reasoning behind that. I don't know if you would like to kind of add to that.
Ms. Zucker.
Madam Chair and Representative Greiling, what I would add to that is as we are moving to do more programming, like you've heard testimony about this morning, what I find is that I need more expertise from subject matter experts to help us accelerate our capacity to use this resource of AmeriCorps to drive and shorten the bridge between research and practice. So a modest increase in the administrative expenses will allow us to do that. Additionally, it is our job to do more about managing relationships with the private sector so that they can help expand what's possible through these resources. And all of you that have worked with the private sector know that the relationship management side of that does take resources that where it's really helpful to have a small increase to the amount of resources we can dedicate it to those two particular activities.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I still object to this. I thought you might be going to say it was for the training and evaluation. That's part of what I think you said. And we have in the legislature Representative Peterson's bill, and we're going to be looking at some of those things, talking about it with maybe an amendment to, I guess that's another bill. Anyway, Representative Peterson's bill is having a lot more evaluation of teachers in the school districts, and we're not giving them a single dime for that mandate, so therefore it makes it an unfunded mandate. We're giving the Department of Education their usual duties and others, as always we do that, but they're getting what I think the commissioner called a crippling or some word like that of the Department of Education due to our budget situation here. So I'm disturbed then by this non-parallel direction, and I wonder if Representative Woodard would consider it a friendly amendment to delete the change from 7 and leave it at 5.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Greiling. I think that the 7% is necessary for what they're doing here, and so I'd like to keep it at 7%. It represents about $18,000 I know that we're going to continue to have discussions about the teacher evaluation, teacher effectiveness. So my preference is that we leave it at 7.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then I would like to offer an oral amendment to change it from 7 to 5 and ask for a roll call vote.
We will hear a roll call. Representative Greiling moves that 7 be deleted on line 412 and that 5 be reinstated. Is there any further discussion? Representative Kapp.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This was actually a point that I was going to make, and Representative Greiling stole my thunder on bringing this up. But I, too, am concerned with this. I think if you take a look at a lot of these types of programs, 5% or less is actually what they shoot for. And so I think overall, I would be okay with the fact if we went with the 5% and then also had a study where they could come back to us in a year to say if the funding isn't sufficient for the extra training and evaluation, that's fine. But I think overall, in these types of times that we do need to make sure that those dollars are going to the kids, and I would like to see us support that 5%.
Representative Kath and Representative Woodard, help me out here, but I believe this is already in the Senate Omnibus Finance Bill in this form, right, as we have it in the amendment? Representative Woodard.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
So it has been debated extensively in that body and put in place for a reason, and I believe at least Ms. Suker was a part of that discussion. Representative Woodard, any other comment?
The only other comment I would make is that, of course, the discussion that happens in the House is much more strenuous and much more well thought out, so I would plug the House over the Senate from that standpoint. And I would just encourage anyone who has not been to a location where Serve Minnesota is currently serving our schools and think you don't get your bang for your buck out of what Serve Minnesota does, I guess I challenge you to do that. And I think that this is a reasonable request for them to be able to continue to manage this program and to expand what and what we're asking them to do. So I would recommend a no vote on this.
Representative Benson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Just kind of a clarification for my benefit here. Is this authorization for increased levy then?
Representative Woodard.
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, no. This is out of the existing appropriation.
Okay.
Representative Benson,
thank
further?
You.
Seeing no other concerns, Representative Kiefer.
Okay, sorry, I'm just a little confused then, because wouldn't this have a fiscal note? Wouldn't this be fiscal policy?
No. Representative Woodard and members, this the omnibus bill, if this is included, will be going to finance. So financial issues will be dealt with in Representative Garofalo's committee.
They will?
Yes, they will, because the omnibus bill does go there.
I just wanted to state that I had the same, I noticed the same thing and had the same concerns.
Thank you, Representative
Kiefer.
Committee Legislative Assistant will take the roll on the amendment, which is to, in line 412, delete 7 and replace with the original language 5.
Representative Erickson.
No.
Representative Dupke.
No.
Representative Mariani.
Yes.
Representative Barrett.
No.
Representative Benson.
Yes.
Representative Crawford.
No.
Representative Greiling.
Yes.
Representative Kapp.
Yes.
Representative Kiefer.
Yes.
Representative Keel.
No.
Representative McFarland.
No.
Representative Murdoch.
No.
Representative Myra.
No.
Representative Norton.
Yes.
Representative O'Driscoll.
No.
Representative Peterson Brandon. Representative Peterson Sandra.
Yes.
Representative Tilbury.
Yes.
Representative Woodard.
No.
There being 8 yeses and 11 noes, the amendment is not adopted. The motion does not prevail. Representative Woodard, any other comments? I see no other questions. Representative McFarland, we didn't have you on the list. Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to comment that I am on the Board of Directors for Serve Minnesota, and they do a great work They leverage our state dollars with federal dollars, nonprofit, private. They do a great job, and I just wanted to make that known.
Thank you, Representative McFarland. I, too, have volunteers in Malacca, and just an excellent, excellent job done by at least one of the volunteers who I know, and I'm so proud of the gains that Malacca has made in reading because of the work that this program does. So, seeing no other questions, House File 617, as amended, will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Hey, Madam Chair, if I can just add one quick
Representative Woodard.
No, thank you. Principal Adams is a neighbor of mine. He lives about a block away, so if anyone does take us up on our offer to view Reading Corps in Belle Plaine, we also have excellent pie at Emma Crombie's in Belle Plaine. So
thank you, Representative Woodard. And thank you very much, testifiers. And I probably did not ask if there was anyone in the audience who was opposed to this. So come forward, Mr. Keller. Mr. Heller, excuse me. I was remiss in that. Say your name for the record, please, Mr. Heller, and begin your testimony.
Thank you for this time. My name is Rick Heller. I'm representing I'm unrepresented in the Senate level based on where I'm currently living. And also representing the underrepresented, which is the twice exceptional and people with print disability. I only had a few specific questions on some of these handouts. If you go to the lead all on page 312, talks about valid and reliable data. And also,
Ms. Suker, could you come to the testifying table again? I think we're going to need your expertise in answering these concerns by Mr. Heller. And Mr. Heller, while she's coming, I have reviewed the language to which you referred me yesterday from Senator Weaker's bill and hope to include that in the omnibus bill. So I hope that will allay some of your concerns.
Well, actually, Madam Chair, the word used to be must or shall on page 935.
I have reviewed that, Mr. Heller. Yes. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Suker. Now, Mr. Heller, would you ask your question again? Because we have the expert at the table.
Yeah, hi. This handout with all the pictures on it, I like that. Thank you. I think it's page 2, but it's not number. I think it's this one.
Yes.
It talks about oral reading fluency, and then there's some stars there. Or asterisks, I think they call them.
Yes, those are asterisks.
I'm not sure what the NWF means because I'm not familiar if it was a public handout what that meant. And then if that's relates to the valid and reliable in the bill, as well as if this is response intervention or based on what works clearinghouse.
Ms. Suker, can you answer that question in regard to the top of page 2 and the table that you've provided?
Madam Chair, yes, I can. What this is we work with researchers to determine what are the target scores that children should have from age 3 to grade 3 related to the 5 big ideas of literacy. And what the researchers have done is make sure that what the research are relying on is valid and reliable. And they have been able to set target scores based on data analysis that allows us to project whether or not a child is on target to be reading proficiently by third grade. And then it is based on response to intervention is the educational model that is reflected in this chart. And the question about the NW nonsense word fluency is one of the measures for a kindergarten child before they begin oral reading fluency at the last half of first grade.
Mr. Heller.
Yes, Madam Chair. May yield one more question. It's my understanding that some RTI models use the Dibbles model, and as well as I like to frankly know what the reading rate for third grade is, if there's a range, and if there's anything beyond that, because it's my understanding, especially between fourth and fifth grade, the vocabulary expands so fast in our English texts and stuff that frankly that's where the gap happens, the expansion of vocabulary and how comprehension becomes diminished. So I guess my question is, everybody's always focused on proficiency up to third grade. However, frankly, the vocabulary expansion frankly happens between fourth and fifth or sixth grade, and then the comprehension falls apart. Could anybody help me understand that?
Ms. Suker?
That question is beyond the scope of my expertise. I'm not a researcher. I just do know that there is a lot of evidence that reading by third grade is an essential gateway, and that's not to say that continuing to work on vocabulary and skills in fourth and fifth grade aren't also important. And part of the reason that we are working so hard to have evidence-based programming across our entire portfolio is that we do have additional AmeriCorps members that focus on the upper grades, knowing exactly to your point that vocabulary is important and does come at later years, but that doesn't diminish the importance of reading by third grade as a gateway skill.
Ms. Suker, do you have volunteers working in those upper grades?
Ms. Suker? Madam Chair, we do have volunteers working in the higher grades to prevent high school dropout. We do have volunteers working in middle school, particularly 4 through 8, focused on math, 8th grade math, which is another gateway skill. So yes, we do have members working across the age ranges.
Thank you, Ms. Suker. And Mr. Heller, I would suggest, you know, you and I talk frequently, but that you check with the schools in which your children are enrolled to find out what is being done to enhance and help them with their reading skills in those upper grades. Because as you commented to me yesterday, I understand your frustration, and we want your children to receive help. But I think, you know, we can't do everything at this level. You have to communicate at the local level as well, so that they know, you know, that you have an older child who's reading at a lower reading level, and you desperately want that to change. Mr. Heller.
Yes, Madam Chair, I respect that. I do would like to ask one more final question.
Go ahead, ask your question.
It's my understanding that that the Dibbles have been lexiled, which is a reading formula based on frequency of vocabulary word and length of sentence. Is this these targets, are they established through lexile or the degree of power reading?
Ms. Suker, are you able to answer that?
Madam Chair, that is beyond my area of expertise. I would need to refer the question to a researcher.
A researcher. Yes. Thank you. Yes. Department officials, can you respond, Brian or Christine, to the concerns Mr. Heller has? No. But, you know, there is a reading specialist at the Department of Education, and I believe, Mr. Heller, you have had conversations probably in the past with that person?
I don't believe so, Madam Chair.
Well, Mr. Heller, before you leave, talk to the representatives from the department, and they could give you the name of that person. I know she's very good, because Representative Myra has been, I think, in conversation with her. So you do want to find out what she could offer you in answering that question, because I can't answer it.
I just for the record, Madam Chair, Minnesota became the 21st state to align their accountability assessment MCA to lexiles. That report hopefully should be coming out this spring. And then, as I expressed before, lexile will become and is becoming a national rigor regarding two things: K through 12 or P20, which is pre-kindergarten through higher education. Both require accessibility. When a child is passed on from high school to college, they will need to know their independent reading level. And lexile has been chosen. So if lexile is better than the degree of power reading, this committee should consider that soon, because we have adopted the Common Core State Language Arts Standards, which sets the text difficulty with Lexel, not the degree of power reading. And if you can, you can inquire if you like with the department, you will find that the degree of power reading is a higher rigor than Lexel is, and that the governor, the National Governor Association commissioners in 2002 put together a panel to look at Lexel for setting the NAEP assessment, which is the National Assessment Educational Progress. They rejected Lexel for reasons. As a education committee and talking with the department, you got to consider what the ramifications of that if you're going to choose to modify our reading levels. Thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Heller, and I'll check with the department as well. Thank you very much, Ms. Suker and Representative Woodard. And we'll move to a continuation of House File 575, my file. Madam Chair, when we met on Friday, I did lay over 575 because we had some complications with some language when it came to unrequested leave. But because so many of you were not here on Friday, House File 575 deals with teachers in public schools who are not of the first class and teachers who are in schools of the first class when it comes to the probationary period. And so as you look at the Delete Everything amendment that was added to 575, subdivision, well, actually, I should tell you, 122A.40 is that continuing contract law that covers teachers who teach in school districts except for cities of the first class, because we have two sections of law in 575, so I want to make sure you understand that we are modifying and amending two different sections of law. So we went through that probationary period Friday. And that continues as well on page 2 in regard to principals who are hired internally. And then we got hung up on page 3 under the unrequested leave of absence, and I will have an amendment to offer in just a moment. Then when we turn to page 5, we switch to cities of the first class. This is a probationary period discharge or demotion that's amended here, and that continues then on, through the end of the bill on page 7. As Representative Greiling suggested Friday, it would be good during the interim for us to look at both sections of the law, because it is most interesting that we have different we have differences for our teachers in the cities of the first class in regard to probation, unrequested leave, demotion, etc., from teachers like I was in other school districts. So I think that would be a good project to take on. But I did want to make sure that you understood we were dealing with two different sections of law. And so, Madam Chair, I would like to clear up the differences that we had with some of the language on page 3, and thereafter offer the A5 amendment.
The author offers the A5 amendment, and would you like to proceed on that?
Well, members, if I may walk through the amendment before we vote on adding it. On page 3, line 5, we are changing the word superintendent to board. Then on line 7, we're deleting school and at and site and inserting program instead. On line 8, deleting or program. And then on line 10, providing that phrase that got us hung up, provide essential leadership in delivering instruction, and inserting instead, I think, language that is much clearer and is much more to the point. Because as you heard me say Friday, I like the fact that we have a two-test level here when we're doing unrequested leave of absence, that it's not only the assignment, but it's also to what extent is the assignment unique. And so we have inserted meet a unique need in delivering curriculum. However, within the Montessori or language immersion program, a teacher must be placed on unrequested leave of absence consistent with paragraph C, and you will see C is below. On page 6, deletion of some language and deleting the new language and striking the existing language. On page 7, deleting new language. In line 12 as well, because this was causing a problem for our earlier change. And then finally inserting a B after line 13 that would read, the board may exempt from the effects of paragraph A those teachers who teach in a Montessori or a language immersion program or provide instruction in an advanced placement course and who in the superintendent's judgment meet a unique need in delivering curriculum, and then the however statement in regard to Montessori and language immersion. And then we'll do the relettering. So, Madam Chair, with that explanation, I'll stand for questions in case members have questions before we adopt the amendment.
Members, are there any questions? Seeing none, then all those in favor of adding the A5 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So now the bill is in the order in which it needs to be, and I guess I'd like to have probably Superintendent Kite come to the table to address any questions that might still be on your minds in regard to this change. And members, you know, it's interesting to note that in the section of law, 122A.40, there's no mention of the word tenure. No mention of the word tenure. It deals with employment, with contracts, and with termination. Because we're always throwing around the word tenure. But there is no mention of it in any place in that section. The only mention of it in section 122A.41 is in the title. So I think we always need to be discussing changes that we make in terms of employment, in terms of contracts. For example, continuing contract is what I thought of when I was teaching, when I was, quote, under tenure. But it's really a continuing contract, not this word that has taken on such a demonizing effect, tenure. And then, of course, it deals with termination. So with that said, Mr. Kite, I just wanted to lay all that out for members to understand.
Mr. Kite, will you please identify yourself for the record?
I'm Charlie Kite. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. We testified and discussed at some length this bill last week. So I think at this point maybe it would be best if we, let me just say this first of all. The amendment that was presented and that you just adopted, we really had pretty much all of the parties at the table trying to sort out how to write that language so it was doing what we all hoped it would do. And I think that has, we have resolved a lot of differences there. But I just stand for questions at this point.
Right. Members, are there any members that would like to have a question? Yes, Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I'm looking at the language, and it talks about the superintendent's judgment meet a unique need in delivering curriculum. And when I was teaching Edina, we began a French immersion program, and a debate developed over staffing that school. And it concerned whether or not people who were certified to teach French and who were competent in teaching French had exactly quite the right accent. And the administrator of the school insisted that only French speakers, those in this case from Quebec, Canada, would be proper for teaching. Now, would that fit under this phrase rubric unique need in delivering curriculum, do you think?
Representative Benson, members of the committee, I was first to say only in Edina. but I didn't say that. You know, we've really limited, when we originally were thinking about this, we were really thinking much broader, but we've limited it down to only a few areas right now. Specifically the Montessori and language immersion, the music, and the AP. So I suppose that would fall under the kind of the immersion program question. I don't know the answer to that. I would point out that in the amendment, we changed the word the superintendent to the board, because the board is the decision maker on this, even though the board would receive recommendations from folks and so forth. I don't know the answer to that particular one, but we also could have the situation where there is somebody who is licensed as an elementary teacher and speaks no French whatsoever. And what we'd want to do is, in that immersion school, keep a person who has the skill in the language. I'm not sure that this bill starts to discern between this accent and that accent, although I know exactly what you're talking about.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, the reason I asked the question is because, from my experience, if a superintendent suggests to a board that a certain process, in this case selecting individuals to not circumvent, but replace, I suppose, the what we used to call bumping rights, boards pretty much go along with it. And my only concern about all this, because I do agree that with advanced placement and some of these other course offerings, there is unique training and so that go beyond what we usually think of as, you know, general certification. But on the other hand, I've experienced during my teaching career that administrative cadres can decide that a good friend of theirs or someone they particularly like ought to be retained, and they develop all kinds of justifications for doing that. Can you give me any confidence that this language does not open up or enhance that tendency?
Mr. Kite.
President Benson and members of the committee, you know, all of these things are subject to some degree to a human process. And much of what superintendents recommend to boards one way or another is controversial or, you know, has some opposition by somebody. First of all, I would hope that wouldn't happen. Secondly, we specifically put language in here regarding the immersion sites as there's this last sentence which really makes sure that seniority is valued, so that we don't have two people with essentially the same skills and the lower seniority one being protected while the one of greater seniority is not protected. We actually put language in there to try to deal with that, and I think that pretty well effectively deals with the issue you're bringing up.
Well, Madam Chair,
Representative Benson,
thank you. Just kind of last comment. You know, thinking about people who are in different positions on a salary scale, for example, during these difficult times, I could see someone being sympathetic to keep an individual whose pay scale is somewhat less than another as well. Can you give me some assurance that this language does not enhance that possibility?
Mr. Kite.
President Benson and members of the committee, again, we try to really talk about unique needs for the students. And it seems to me that wouldn't play in. Trying to think in my mind if there's any way that it would. I actually don't think it would. I'm pretty sure, though, that if some person that is has a slightly less salary is retained in one of these positions, somebody will somewhere in the faculty room say that that was the reason, but that would, by law, by this statute, I don't believe that would be the reason. It would be for this particular purpose.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this, I suppose this question is for Mr. Kite, but it could be for the author as well. It seems to me that on the language, the structure, it's still permissive language. We have the board may accept. Mm-hmm. And so so I think it appears to me that there's a balance, I think, that you're trying to reach here. So I guess my question for Mr. Kite is, since it is permissive, there's nothing here that apparently would bar a district from negotiating with its local bargaining unit not to apply this permission.
Mr. Kite.
Representative Mariani and members of the committee, first of all, it is purposely a permissive piece. We were thinking about it a little differently, though. We were thinking that a school district may simply not want to engage in this kind of a way because they simply didn't want to upset the status quo. So that's possible. I do think it also allows some room for a district to specifically work on some language that works better in that particular district. Or I should say this. I'm not sure if this allows that or not, but I think there is the good potential that a district specifically could work on some language if they wanted to.
Representative Mariani, do you have a follow-up on that? No. Okay. There are no other questions from the committee? And do we have another testifier? Representative Erickson?
Madam Chair, I do not, but I'm sure we have those. Oh, Mr. Arnson would, and I'm sure we have those who would like to speak with concerns.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Aronson, will you please identify
Madam Chair, members, I just wanted to convey to you that...
Representative Aronson, Mr. Aronson, would you please identify yourself for the...
Hi.
Yes.
Madam Chair, members, Roger Aronson, I represent the Elementary and Secondary Principals Association. We just wanted to convey to the committee that, in particular, the extension of the probationary periods that are in here, the principal boards of directors have looked at that and their members and stuff. We think this is a very a good, solid, acceptable change, and we're glad to see it. And we appreciate working with Representative Erickson on this and urge your adoption of the bill.
And Madam Chair, we teachers like the fact that the principals have to be
held accountable. Yes, thank you, Mr. Aronson. I do believe we have Jan Altschweiger as well. And would you please identify yourself when you get to the podium?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Altschweiger, Education Minnesota. And I really have to compliment Representative Erickson on her comments early on about the whole issue related to this is not a change in tenure. This is more related to employment, and it is continuing contract status. It's not tenure, so I really appreciate those comments. Education Minnesota is opposed to this bill, but we do appreciate some of the minor changes that have been made, but still would have major impact on some individuals. I'd like to go through some of the concerns of the bill page by page. That does not mean this testimony is going to be very long, however. If you look at on the DE 1-4, if you look at 1.9, it says that it must be 3 consecutive years. No, that's a long probationary period. Actually, we'd like to see it in a shorter time, but that's not the bill that's before us. But it says 3 consecutive years, but that does have an impact later on in the bill. So I want to remind you that it's 3 consecutive years. Now go down to line 1.12. Here we are. This is the provision that requires that, actually takes away the requirement that there be evaluations that are spaced out during the year. What's the implication of this? By taking this away, we are now saying that it is permissive, it's okay, for an administrator who might be very, very busy, they are busy people, to say, oops, You know, I haven't evaluated that probationary period, and I've got to do 3 evaluations, so I'm going to cram them all in the last week of school. Is that really okay? Is that a sound educational practice? And, you know, Mr. Kite might say, yes, well, I'm pretty sure that's not going to happen. The fact of the matter is, it could happen. It has happened. It does happen. And so we believe that it would be very wise for administrators to just put it on their calendar. I'm going to have an evaluation within the time frames listed between 1.13 and 1.15. So, you know, I think it's in everybody's best interest to make sure that we're being fair to these probationary people. After all, they're putting in 3 years. I've actually had, when I was a half-time lobbyist and half-time field staff, I've had probationary teachers tell me on their 3rd year, they're going to let me go. And I said, why? Because for whatever reason. And have you been evaluated? Well, they're getting their evaluations in now. I don't think that's okay for somebody who's put in 3 years of their life to try to stay in that district. Okay, let's move on to page 2, line 2.11. I understand, you know, the thought about why we'd be moving from 60 days to 120 days. So basically what this does, it says, in order for a probationary teacher to have a complete year counted, you'd have to be you must complete 120 days of teaching service each year. Now, that goes back to that consecutive piece, okay, that I said earlier. But I believe what this means is that if I was a female, have a baby, I want to take a certain amount of time off. In fact, maybe I am bedridden. The doctor says you must, during the pregnancy, you must stay in bed for 10 weeks, which certainly isn't unheard of. And then I want to stay home with my baby for 2 months because I want to be a caregiver, a parent that is devoted to the child. I now have lost my probationary year. Let's just say that's year number 3. Okay? Now go back to that first language that says that they must be consecutive. That now means that because I had the unfortunate circumstance of having to be bedridden for 10 weeks and the fortunate circumstance actually that I could be home with my child for a couple of months, I now won't be able to meet the requirements for the qualifying year. Now it means the next year, the 4th year of my employment, I start all over with my probationary period. So actually it means that my probationary period is now 6 years because I happen to be sick and I want to be a good mom and take care of my baby. So I really think you should think this over. Because the current law, I don't believe, is causing any problems. I haven't heard of any problems. And we're just really trying to treat teachers fairly. I also think, you know, we certainly value military time. But if you look at lines 2.6 to 2.9, we actually supported this language when it went into law a few years ago because we think that, you know, there's value in military service. But here we're really saying that military service is more important than being a good mom. I shouldn't say we are saying that's more important, but one could ask that question, you know, do you value that as much? Clearly there is that exception okay in law. But not necessarily for the other. I understand why Mr. Aronson is supporting Section 2 in this bill because I think that there is some justification for having a probationary period of 2 years for anybody who moves from teaching into the job of a principal, because the jobs are very different. But that makes me ask the question, why, if we are moving from a teaching position to a principal position, that's only 2 years in the same district, why a teacher who has already proven themselves as a teacher would have to serve another 3 years in another district? So I think there are some legitimate concerns about those issues. Then moving on to line 3.1. Now we get into the unrequested leave of absence. And certainly Education Minnesota appreciates the tightening of it, but we do believe that there are some situations here that could be problematic. For instance, you could have, you know, we understand the Montessori piece of it, but you could have a first grade teacher who also has met the requirements to teach Montessori and would be a more veteran teacher, but would lose their job over the newer Montessori teacher. So I think you could actually say things like that throughout the unrequested leave of absence, and I know that this has been discussed a lot, so Madam Chair, I don't think I will belabor that point. One of the things that we try, everybody I think is trying to do here, is to attract and retain really good teachers. And if a district is able to coax a very good teacher to another district, let's say Minneapolis, St. Paul, or any other district, do we really want them to, are they going to be encouraged to make that transfer if they're going to have to put in another 3 years to complete the probationary period? So we would ask that question and hope you'd consider those thoughts. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Alschweiger. And we do have another, are there any more testifiers in the audience for or against the bill? Mr. Keller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rick Heller speaking. On university design, print disabled and twice exceptional. As the last testifier noted, on page 1, or should I say line 1.12, regarding three times, as we all know, most school districts are going to trimesters. Also, they are also assessing or evaluating their students three times a year, especially those kids that are at risk who have print disabilities or otherwise. And I do agree the fact that if you do remove language such a, that was been struck out in a sequential way, you're allowing principals more flexibility. However, by providing more flexibility as it relates to the three terms now, as we've all gone to, and compressing teacher evaluations, I don't believe could be very helpful. Just as children are evaluated in a meaningful time, three times a year for monitoring progress, one assessment that's used is the MAP testing by NWA. So as we are developing these comprehensive assessments for principals, and to be consistent with that design that's coming in a year or so, by providing this, how does that fit into that? And that's about all I have to say, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Heller. Representative Mariani, I believe you.
Madam Chair,
Madam Chair, I do have an oral amendment.
Yes.
To allay one of the concerns of Ms. Alschweiger. On line 1.12 of the DE 1-4 amendment,
after the word, the phrase three times, insert the word throughout. So it will read three times throughout each school year. And then again on page 5, line 5.25, after the phrase three times, insert throughout. And I'd like to incorporate that, Madam Chair, into my DE 1-4 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Ms. Larson, would you like to repeat that, please?
Madam Chair, members, on the H0575DE 1-4 amendment, page 1, line 12, after the word times, insert throughout. And on page 5, line 25, after the word times, insert throughout.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. We'll take a motion on that then. Representative Erickson moves that amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Same sign. Motion carried.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In response to Ms. Alzweiger's concern, on page 1, in the lines 12 through 15, because it's been suggested that the probationary period be 120 days instead of segmented, that would be the reason for the deletion of that language. We have to be consistent, and I think because we're professionals, we view our teaching over a long term for evaluative purposes rather than a short term. So I would suggest that as we have put together this proposal, that there's consistency and also support of our professionalism. On page 2, in regard to Ms. Alzweiger's questioning the military service, that's federal law. So I don't think that we have the ability to change that. There are different provisions under which the military serve, and it is not meant to demean, for example, a mom who may be serving. We honor her service, and we acknowledge that there's something very special that's being done, and so federal law, I think, protects that. 3 years, if you change to another district, it's a challenge, but again, I would speak as a professional and say that I believe that it's important that a teacher have that 3-year experience when he or she decides to move to a different district. I had that experience in moving from Princeton to Cambridge and reflected on that just last night when I was reviewing this proposal, and did begin my probationary period again for 1 year, of course, but would have welcomed an extended time, so that truly that school board viewed me as an asset to their teaching cadre. So with that, Madam Chair, I think there might be some amendments waiting in the wings.
Yes, there are. Initially, Representative Brandon Peterson, would you like to offer your amendment?
No. I'll pass.
Did you have any comments or questions?
I just had a question, actually. I think the amendment, the oral amendment you made, was a good one to add throughout. I think quality evaluation is extremely important, obviously. I've demonstrated that in committee here. I'm still a little bit concerned about striking the language that kind of divvies it up throughout the school year, and I'm just wondering what the reason is for getting rid of that language.
Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, I think I would ask Mr. Kite or Mr. Aronson, maybe Mr. Kite, to discuss why the 120 days is a better period over which we have the evaluations than the segmented
periods.
Mr. Kite, will you identify yourself again for the record?
I'm Charlie Kite. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. I'm going to ask that Representative Peterson just state the question once more. I heard it, but I want to be sure that I'm on the exact right section. I think you're on page
yeah,
one.
It's line 1.13 to 1.15. Strikes the language that divides in certain time frames the three evaluations that are required for probationary teachers. While the addition of the word throughout would lead one to believe that it should be like that, striking the language to me opens the door to kind of the threat to do three evaluations in 3 weeks, and I don't think that's good policy, and I think by striking the language, we basically open the door up to that type of situation. What's the reason for getting rid of that?
Mr. Kite.
Representative Peterson, members of the committee. The intent of this language originally was not, I don't believe, to try to parcel out the evaluations, although all of us acknowledge that would be a much better way to do it. The intent of this language was to simply address how many evaluations had to be done if you didn't work a full year. If you worked a full year, you'd had three. If you worked two-thirds of a year, roughly 120 days, you did two. Mm-hmm. If you worked 60 days, you only did one. That was the intent of this language. So when you move this to 120 days, that language no longer really bears significance, and in fact, a person working 120 days, we would expect that they would be evaluated three times under the new language, which actually increases the number of evaluations. So that's the reason this was struck. It was like it was language that no longer fit, and it wasn't the intent to space the evaluations out. I actually think the oral amendment that was presented, the throughout, actually is a pretty good way of giving a signal that needs to be spaced out.
Yeah, and I agree. I guess, you know, regardless of what the intent originally was, I would say that it makes a lot of sense to require that those evaluations be spaced out. And I just have one other question. Actually, both of the points that Ms. Alzager brought up, I think, were pretty decent. The other one was the three consecutive years. I think you, Chair, addressed that. I just she brought up the example of maternity leave and other situations. What would you say to kind of mitigate the concern as it relates to that?
Yes, Mr. Kite.
Not necessarily, yeah. Mr. Kite.
I could say a word or two to it. Representative Peterson and members of the committee. There are times when individuals do miss some parts of the school year for whatever reason, some illness, maternity, or whatever. They are still consecutively employed mm-hmm. by the school district. Now, if the person misses a significant part of a year, it seems to us that it would be okay that even though they're consecutively employed, that third final year of probation may be the next year out. Because the district also has a need to be sure that they know the quality of the individual teaching, just as Ms. Alschwager would want to protect the individual teacher, we also want to protect the district. But as long as you have the consecutive employment, I think that is not problematic.
Just one more follow-up, if I could.
Yes, Mr. Peterson, Representative Peterson.
So I see that here, but say you don't meet the minimum days requirement to be classified as a year. Say you had an extended maternity leave for maybe medical reasons, maybe it's another reason, who knows. Because it's consecutive years, you could potentially set the clock back to zero. After 2 years, you could have an extended medical leave and basically bring it all the way back to another, where they have to do another 3 years.
That's case law.
And I'm just curious if there's a way that we could change the language or... and maybe Chair Erickson's talking about it right now, to make that not the case so we don't risk setting these teachers back to zero, essentially.
Representative Erickson, do you have a response?
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, there's case law that does not allow that to occur, so the teacher would be protected.
Okay, great.
Thank you very much. We do have two more representatives that would like to ask questions. One is Representative John Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, Representative Peterson just asked all my questions and got all my answers, so thank you, Representative Peterson, so I'll pass.
Thank you very much. Representative Sandra Peterson. Sandra Peterson.
I always know what your name is. They just don't.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And what happened to Mr. Kite?
Mr. Kite, you're needed here again. Keep your seat warm.
Mr. Kite, you thought you were going to get away.
and Madam Chair.
I was trying to escape.
This actually, this is just clarifying some language of Representative Peterson, because he brought up also my concern. I do remember when we had some of this discussion around this language, and we had in the past teachers who didn't get evaluated and probationary teachers who didn't get evaluated until the last 3 weeks or the last month, and I'm sure that has changed within the principal ranks, but I do remember the intent, I don't know of this particular language, but I know there was intent of the language to be sure that the teachers did get evaluated at least, you know, within the, maybe the first 3 months, the second 3 months, you know, so that it was periodic throughout the year. In your opinion, does throughout have the meaning that we're talking about, or does it add assurance that there's going to be three evaluations randomly spaced throughout the year so that that teacher gets the kind of evaluation that they need?
Representative Peterson and members of the committee, the status of the professionalism around the evaluation process has improved significantly in the time I've been working, and even I just say even in the last 10 years. And I think that the concern you're bringing up, 15 years ago, was a absolutely legitimate concern, and I think it was more widespread than we'd care to admit, you know, quick evaluations at the end of the year. But it is my impression from the field that we are collectively as school districts doing a much better job than we did. I will not say that the school districts are absolutely perfect. I actually ran into a situation last fall where I found a probationary teacher that never had one single evaluation done. And I frankly chided the superintendent for letting that occur. But I've also collected a lot of the evaluation instruments from around the state, small districts, regional centers, suburban districts, and I'm finding as we collected them and looked at them that the great majority of school districts are doing evaluations significantly better, and they are really working hard to spread them out. Will that word alone absolutely ensure this, that the evaluations are spread out? Probably not, but will it help us to make sure that we're getting better and better at doing this? I think it would.
Thank you, Mr. Kite.
Madam Chair, can I follow up with one question?
Just a quick, we have about 10 minutes left, and we do have another amendment to consider. So would you still like to make your follow-up question, Representative Peterson?
It's quick. Do you think that
go ahead
is better than the current language?
Mr. Kite.
Representative Peterson, just say that one more time.
Is throughout better than the current language?
Representative Peterson, members of the committee, yes.
Madam Chair, I'd like to offer an oral amendment. Insert periodically in front of throughout on line 12 of page 1. And on page 5, in front of throughout, insert periodically as well. Line 25, and maybe Ms. Larson would repeat that. I rather liked Representative Peterson's randomly spaced, but between Ms. Larson and me, we decided periodically would be more more appropriate here, just one word. So, Ms. Larson, would you repeat what I just offered?
Yes, Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, on the H0575DE1-4 amendment, on page 1, line 12, the amendment would be as follows. After times, insert periodically throughout, and on page 5, line 25, after times, insert periodically throughout.
All right. Representative Erickson has moved the oral amendment.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to.
All right. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carried.
Now, members, I'm going to have to face all the principals in the rural part of Minnesota. But I'll defend. I'll tell them Representative Peterson and I will be out there to help them.
We do have another amendment at the table that is Representative Kath. Did you want to move your amendment?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and members. I would like to move the A6 amendment. Members, I think before us is this bill does definitely bring us to a point now where we're looking at the employment status of individuals in a different light. Specifically, looking at the 120 days as well as the 3-year probationary period for transfers of individuals, and listening to the testimony and the answers behind why we are moving to that is the need for consistent and substantive evaluation. And so the amendment that I have before you actually brings us to that, and that says that all districts must have a summative evaluation as well as a 3-year cycle for putting that evaluation forward so that we know that there is consistency in the way in which these teachers are going to be evaluated. And I think this is critical for us. We need to bring this conversation forward. I had a meeting on Friday with the commissioner. She's happy to see that that this could be a part of this bill, to say that the conversation does need to be brought back into the light here, and especially on this bill, that I don't think that we can have this moving forward without some form of substantive evaluation within it. And with that, members, I would stand for questions.
Are there any questions? Brenda Peterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kath. Is there any difference between this amendment and the Representative Reinert's bill on teacher evaluation?
Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, actually there have been some changes, and the changes to it actually have been okayed by Representative Reinert as well.
Representative Peterson.
Could you just walk us through what the changes are?
For the most part, what you're going to see is looking at some structuring on the second page here of just looking at the student academic growth, that 3-year professional cycle, which provides for a little bit more of the academic growth, providing the peer coaching. And Representative or Ms. Larson could give us if there's any technical changes that Representative Reinert brought in there as well.
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, there are some technical changes, slight editing changes. As Representative Kath mentioned, on page 2, clauses 9 and 10. On page 3, section 4 ties into current grounds for termination, this accountability system. On page 5, section 8, that's the case also. Like on page 2, on page 5, you'll see clauses 9 and 10 reflect those same changes. In addition, the language that Representative Erickson and Reinert authored on principal evaluation is included here, too.
Representative Peterson, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah. I guess I'm just curious about the evaluation system you're putting forward here in general and what the difference is, or what's preventing districts right now from doing any of the things that are laid out in this amendment.
Representative Kath.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Peterson. I think overall what we're looking at here is making sure that if a district does not have a structured format for their evaluations, that the state would be moving in a process to make sure that we provide that substantive format, specifically if one cannot be negotiated between the teachers as well as the administrators within that district. I think that's the true intent here of where we're at, is that first and foremost, I don't want to put on a structural mandate on these school districts right now at a time that we are not providing them with the finances available to do that type of evaluation. And frankly, we need to recognize that some school districts are doing an incredible job with evaluations. And I've heard from numerous school districts saying that other evaluation processes or systems that have been proposed here really are going to kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater when it comes to the processes and the movement that they've actually made in creating good evaluation systems. But what this does is it allows for districts that are not at that point yet, that do not have a structure in place that we think are at the substantive process to say that we are able to fully evaluate those educators, that we will, as a state, put forward a process that I think is going to be valuable for them.
So just to
summarize. Yes, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There isn't anything preventing the districts from doing this already, doing it themselves, implementing this themselves. Is that the answer?
Representative Kath.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson. The most important part of this amendment is the fact that the state will actually be initiating a structural format. So right now we do not have something in place that actually puts the commissioner at the helm here to say we need to create a framework. So yes, there is already a piece in here that says that a school district can and should have a good evaluation system, but there is nothing in state statute right now that actually directs our commissioner as well as other stakeholders to look at an overall state framework.
I'll just wrap up.
Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair, I'll just wrap up my comments. We won't get into this. Obviously, this issue can't be dealt with in 10 minutes.
Two minutes.
I'll just say, you know, the House, the body of all the members, the House members, have already taken a position on this amendment. This amendment was offered during the Education Omnibus Bill hearing, and it was voted down by the body. I believe the majority of the members in this committee are on record as such. So that's all. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Madam Chair, I would ask for a no vote. I appreciate Representative Kath's concern, and I share some of those concerns. Certainly appreciate him adding the principal evaluation. But we have one plan that we're moving forth with, and I will certainly keep this available as we proceed through conference committee if we find a need to insert any of these suggestions. So, Madam Chair, with that, I would ask for a no vote.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. I do have Representative Mariani. Just one quick question.
Madam Chair, I'd like a roll call on this. And, I also think that while it's true that the majority may have spoken on this issue already, at the end of the day, this body is going to have to arrive in accord with the executive branch in order to enact law. And I think that Representative Kath has offered an amendment in the spirit of trying to move us forward, not to prevent movement forward, but to be able to offer something else on the table that can get us closer to a final agreement. And he's already indicated the governor has sent signals that this is a lot closer to what this body has currently passed that's going to meet his standards. And so I am encouraged by Representative Erickson's expression that regardless of the vote here, that she will keep this in mind as this moves forward. But Madam Chair, I'd like a roll call on
that. Representative Mariani has requested a roll call, and we will have the clerk do the roll.
Representative Erickson.
No.
Representative Duffy.
No.
Representative Mariani.
Yes.
Representative Barrett.
No.
Representative Benson.
Yes.
Representative Crawford.
No.
Representative Dabney.
Yes.
Representative Greiling.
Yes.
Representative Kath.
Yes.
Representative Kiefer.
No.
Representative Keel. Representative McFarland.
No.
Representative Murdoch.
No.
Representative Myra.
No.
Representative Norton.
No.
Representative O'Driscoll.
No.
Representative Peterson Brandon.
No.
Representative Peterson Sandra.
Yes.
Representative Tilbury.
Yes.
Representative Woodard.
No.
With 8 nays and ayes and 11 nays, the amendment does not pass.
So, Madam Chair, with that, I would like to renew my motion that House File 575, as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register.
All those, Representative Erickson has moved House File 575 as amended. Excuse me. Yes, Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I'll be very brief. I know we want to go. Representative Erickson, I think you have a pretty good bill. I think you and I are pulling in the same direction on a number of really important issues related to our ability to better align our professional teachers with where they're most needed. And so I think there'd be money for it. I do want to say, however, that I am disappointed, not surprised, but I'm disappointed that we did not move forward with the Kath Amendment. We've already moved forward with the Peterson language. I think we add to our toolbox as we engage with the executive branch by being able to offer a broad array of approaches here with which we can negotiate with. And so I'm really saddened that we're not able to do that yet as a committee. So at this point, I'm not going to support this bill, but I'm not going to support this bill not because I don't think there's really good policy in it. I just think we missed an opportunity here, and I would hope that as we continue through the legislative session that we can seize those opportunities when they come up again.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Yes, Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have the same sentiment. I do like the bill, but I would like to have seen the Kath Amendment, and so I would request a roll call, and I will not be able to support the bill without the Kath Amendment. So we're sending a signal to Representative Erickson for the conference committee, since there are no Democrats on it.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. All right, Representative Erickson has moved House File 575. There will be a roll call, and the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Erickson.
Yes.
Representative Debke.
Yes.
Representative Mariani.
No.
Representative Barrett.
Yes.
Representative Benson.
Reluctantly no.
Representative Crawford.
Yes.
Representative Dabney.
No.
Representative Greiling.
No.
Representative Kath.
No.
Representative Kiefer.
Yes.
Representative McFarland.
Yes.
Representative Murdoch.
Yes.
Representative Myra.
Yes.
Representative Norton. Representative O'Driscoll.
Yes.
Representative Peterson Brandon.
Yes.
Representative Peterson Sandra.
No.
Representative Tilbury.
No.
Representative Woodard.
Yes.
Okay. With 7 nays and 11 yeses, the bill does pass and moves on to the next step. Thank you very much. Meeting is adjourned, members.